You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the views of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to cover a story that is breaking in the news as I speak, although it's a little bit old news. And what am I talking about? Libya is fast approaching, and some would say already is, a failed state, because large parts of it are controlled by various militia and terrorist groups. And there's been a raging battle going on for example, parts of Tripoli. And about a week ago, one group, the Dawn of Libya, also called the Masked Men, took over the airport in Tripoli. Now, Tripoli is the capital of Libya. And why is that important? Because Libya is far away from the United States. They captured at least 10 or 11 aircraft. Many aircraft were damaged at the airport because there was a raging battle for it between, again, different groups. But at least 10 or 11, it's somewhat unclear yet the exact number, of Libyan airline aircraft. And they have a small fleet, but it is of various Airbus models. And the Airbus is produced in Europe. And they were used when Libyan Airlines was actually running. Operations ceased sometime in mid-July because of the fighting going on. And you got to remember, just to so you recall, because the fighting for Tripoli was going on, the United States withdrew its embassy. And they didn't fly out of the Tripoli airport. They drove by caravan west, being escorted by helicopters as well as drone aircraft. Tripoli is a very dangerous place to be in, as is Benghazi. And the government has declared this group that took over the airport as a terrorist organization, but there are several of them. And they're fighting each another for power and control of areas. And they're well armed. And they're well armed because when Gaddafi was overthrown, many of his depots where he had the armaments, and that's rifles, pistols, ammunition, surface-to-air missiles, shoulder-mounted ground-to-air missiles, surface-to-air missiles, were captured, as well as other equipment. Today, in Libya, you have a number of groups. I like to think of them as gangs, but they're vying for power, and they're violent, and they're shooting at each another, and that's why I'm calling it a failed state. It's very much like the drug cartels on our own border. They have rivalries because they're trying to sell illegal drugs into the United States, and they each have their area of control, and they literally are violent with each other. They'll cut people's heads off, and that has been the news as well, and I'll get to that in a minute. Now, I'm bringing this up because the intelligence community, and that's the United States intelligence community, including the National Security Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, as well as military intelligence, Defense Intelligence Agency, are concerned exactly where are these aircraft, who controls them, and what are their intentions in terms of their use. Now, there's a number of scenarios. Now, remember, 9-1-1 is coming up, a little over a week away. You could put explosives in these aircraft and fly them into buildings or oil refineries or government buildings in surrounding countries. These are large aircraft. They hold a lot. And they're not only passenger jets, but they're also cargo jets. So they have a lot of capacity. Even without the explosives, if they have the fuel, which they do, if they have the fuel, it has a fairly long range. The immediate threat of the countries surrounding Libya, including Egypt, Saudi Arabia, Morocco, Tunisia are all potential targets. And for that matter, so is Iraq in terms of it could literally fly to Baghdad. Now what's the challenge to it? Take, for example, both the Egypt and the Saudi Arabia. They both have military jet fighter aircraft. They have radars. They have command and control systems, radars, air force that could bring the jet down. However, put yourself in the position of a terrorist that wants to do damage. He's going to try to take out a high-value target that will get the attention of the world. And they have no shortage of people that will die for their cause. Suicide bombers as well as jihadists. And there's many of them flocking to them. Why, for example, what's happening in Syria, in Iraq? That group is winning. The Islamic State is winning. Yes, they are being attacked daily by U.S. military aircraft. And they don't have any aircraft. And that can go on for a long period of time, but it does take up and consume a lot of resources. You have to commit aircraft to the mission. It's our aircraft carrier, and I need to say this, I was wrong as to where the aircraft carrier group with the aircraft carrier George H.W. Bush, it's in the Persian Gulf, is the best information I can get so far. Where in the Persian Gulf? I don't know. It's moving around. Its aircraft are moving around, but it's a decent flight from the Persian Gulf to northern Iraq. It's at least an hour coming and going, so you probably need tanker aircraft as well. Not only aircraft, you also have drones, and they're probably, this is just a guess on my part, being controlled by our Air Force in Turkey out of an Air Force base there. So both the United States has been launching attacks against the Islamic State. To date, there's over 125, and it's going up daily. And what they're trying to do is take out their military equipment, namely their trucks, armored vehicles, Humvees, and tanks, if they can spot where they're located. And they probably have special operators on the ground marking them with lasers, so when our fighter jets or drones come over, that the equipment can be easily located. And that's continuing as I speak. But to date, most of our efforts in the Middle East right now are airstrikes by both jet aircraft, jet fighter aircraft, as well as drones. Now we have a new wrinkle. We have the potential, and there are a number of scenarios, but the two leading ones is to fill these aircraft that this group has captured with high explosives and fly it into a high-value target. Now, let me give you an example. What would be a high-value target? Oil refineries. For example, in Saudi Arabia, you can see them from miles away. They're a very bright light against a very dark desert. So that's one example of a very high-value target that, if taken out, would dramatically impact not only Saudi Arabia, but oil production. It would make the cost of buying gasoline skyrocket because Saudi Arabia has the largest, with the possible exception of the United States. I really didn't have time to do a comparison, but they have refineries, for example, on Yanbu on the Red Sea, and that's on the west side, closest to Libya. And that's probably one of the major targets that they might consider taking out. There are also military targets in Egypt. So Egypt is on the alert, and so is Saudi Arabia. And to a lesser extent, so is the Iraqi government, because they have, to the extent that they can go under the radar, in other words, fly this aircraft very low, you're going to need an experienced pilot. And remember, a lot of this area is very, very flat. And this would be a suicide mission. This is your one-way ticket. And that's another thing to keep in mind. They really don't need a return. And they have ranges of several thousand miles, depending on what the fuel load is and how much explosives they have in it. And remember, we're fast approaching 911. I think one potential target is refineries or the oil wells of Saudi Arabia. The Saudis are probably on alert. Now, they have airborne, they have AWACS capability. But remember, they have to find, there's a lot of these jet aircraft, these airliners, can come from any direction. Now, most likely it'll come from the west. But what if they circle around? They could come from the east as well. I don't know the capability of either the Egyptian or Saudi Air Force. They've been trained by us. They have our equipment. So they're competent. They certainly have the ability to take down a Libyan airliner controlled by terrorists. But it can come at any time and really at any direction, at any target. And they will go for something that will have impact. So this will be on the news. Could they go to the United States? They could, but I think that's unlikely for the simple reason it's a rather long flight, especially if you're flying at a low altitude. But if they can find a trained pilot that maybe worked for an airline that is now a true believer, either jihadist or Islamic jihadist or a suicide bomber, his training and experience in where airlines fly, he could piggyback on top of, in other words, fly low, then pop up and fly close to another airline. That's one scenario. And I don't pretend to be an expert on this. Now, this is worrying Washington, D.C. It should worry Egypt, and it is, and it should worry Saudi Arabia, and yes, even Iraq, the government of Iraq. But that's just one scenario. These airliners can carry several hundred passengers and a good amount of equipment, ammunition, arms. You could fly this airliner into an airport and then try to take over the airport. That also is a distinct possibility. And you could disguise yourself, identify yourself. Obviously, they're not going to say this is terrorist flight one, we're coming. They're going to really try to convince you there's some other airline flight, land, and once they land, exit that plane and take over the airport and surrounding areas. That's just another scenario. And remember, they have more than one aircraft. Now, this is a very much a one-way mission. It's very much a suicide mission. But they can do a lot of damage, and that's what they want to do. They want to terrify you. No one is safe. No facility is safe. No airport is safe. No government building is safe. That's what terror is all about. They're looking for a propaganda coup to get on all the news. And just remember 9-1-1. What happened? It was on the news for weeks, months. And the U.S. economy did go into a recession that it came out of. But what did it stop? People were not flying anymore. Very few wanted to go to an airport and fly anywhere. It did damage to the travel and recreation industry. It did damage to the airline companies. And it did damage the U.S. economy. So I think that we better find these aircraft and we better make sure who controls them and if necessarily destroy them so they don't become a weapon, a human-guided bomb that can do a lot of damage. And there are some major cities that, just like 911, these planes could fly into building. Now, why I'll say I don't think they're going to make it to the United States, they can get lucky. And that's truly the problem. They can get lucky. If you don't know where they are, who controls them and what's on them, there are a lot of flights every day. There are thousands upon thousands of flights. And you can get caught in the plane can hide in that clutter. Yes, their identification, communications and identification equipment on these airliners so that the controllers can track where they are. But I think it's a combination of flying very, very low for a long time, put it on automatic pilot, but they got to be careful. And trying to mix in, if they're on a established airline route and have an experienced pilot, mix in with that. So you're going to learn more about these aircraft in the coming weeks. This is, like I said, a breaking story. There's some information online. And for those that are new to the show, the way you listen to the show is go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. And let me say that a little slower. That's pronkpops, P-R-O-N-K-P-O-P-S .wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll have links to my most current shows And at the very bottom, you'll have links to my entire portfolio of shows, except for some of the early shows. But in between, you'll have what I call my show prep, my notes, which includes articles, videos about the story that I'm commenting upon or giving my opinion on. That should get your attention, and it's getting your attention. It'll be in the news. It's already hit talk radio. I can vouch for that because that's how I learned of this. And I do recommend, for a gentleman named Gertz has published an article, and I have a link to it on my companion blog for it, as well as excerpts. Read his article, and he's not the only one aware of this. A lot of people are aware of it, and the intelligence community is aware of it. And they probably, they're not going to tell news reporters, they probably have already identified several locations of where the aircraft is. But you got to get them all, and that's the problem. And they can be flown anywhere. For example, Africa is a big place. And yes, you're going to need a runway of the appropriate length, but there are many of those runways, and you can hide that aircraft. And that's probably what's being done right now. It could also be used just as a transport vehicle, transport troops or members of their organization, as well as supplies to various places, for example, just in Libya. So don't take the worst case. You got to plan for a number of scenarios of what could happen, and that's the challenge. These also are valuable assets. They could sell the aircraft and then use the money to pay their own people, as well as buy additional arms. There are a lot of things that can be done and a lot of options that they have, and our intelligence services, as well as the intelligence services of our allies, are probably right now scurrying to try to find out where they are. So this will be a story that will get more and more attention. Now, on a somewhat related issue, I've been listening to talk radio. And I listen to a number of shows, some in the morning, some in the afternoon, some late at night, largely to see what subjects they're talking about. But also, we don't have the capability. We're not set up for people to call in. I wish we were, but we're simply not. And really, because we simply don't have a large audience. This is a college radio station. It's not a commercial over-the-air radio station. It's over the web, and most of my listeners, even though they can listen to it right now, most of them listen via podcast, and that's why I have the website and links to it. And I need to say one other thing. We now have our new KDUX web radio website, and what I'm doing is also posting my show notes there, but the primary source should be prompopops.wordpress.com. But you also can Google KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, and you'll get the KDUX Web Radio site, and it'll have my notes for the shows this semester. You also hopefully will have other shows posting there as well, but right now I'm it in terms of posting there. So that's more for your information. But go to prompopops.wordpress.com and you can go listen to this show as well as past shows. I usually post them. My goal is always to post them by about 9:30 in the evening because I have to do some editing and I also have other things to do. I'm looking at the time. For example, I have somewhere to go at 5. So I can't broadcast long, and they shut down the studio at 5. They broadcast music, but I'm more or less cut off. Now, what was I going to talk about? I've noticed in talk radio, especially those talk show hosts that I think is fair to say are very sympathetic to the Republican neocons, the neoconservatives, and they were big supporters of the original, not Bush 1, but George W. Bush's war in Iraq. And guess what? They're pounding those war drums again. And many of them are acting like, talking like armchair generals. And what's kind of funny, they've never spent a day in uniform. I know the background. I know who they are. With few exceptions, they've never been in the military. They may have a son and daughter that went into the military. I know that for a fact, because I know many of these people by name. I know who they are, but what is somewhat frustrating is and I have one in mind. I've heard him say he's a libertarian. He's not a libertarian. I'm not going to identify who it is. He's a neocon, and he has his neocon friends on for interviews. That's fine. I enjoy listening to him. I think he has one of the best shows on the air, and I want to hear what they're saying. And they're pounding now those war drums very loud. They want to go in there and bomb the Islamic State, annihilate it. Annihilate it. They were the ones that wanted to go in Iraq. Remember, I was very much on the fence. Not that I didn't think the Saddam regime should have fallen. I was all for that. The problem, ladies and gentlemen, and this is a very important point. We have generals and military leaders that are very good at winning battles. And the United States Armed Forces can win any war or battle that it wants to start. It might cost you billions of dollars, but that's true. No, there's no one that really can take us on today, whether it's in nuclear or conventional. So guess what? Do our enemies try to attack us with nuclear weapons or conventional weapons? Well, if they're smart, the answer is absolutely not. They're either going to fight a guerrilla or insurgency war against us. And you don't play by their rules. What they're trying to do right now, the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria, is get the United States involved in Iraq again. In other words, do exactly what the neocons are pounding those drums. Come on, come down to Iraq and Syria. We'll fight you. And they're taunting us by cutting off the heads, beheading journalists. And ladies and gentlemen, they have dozens of kidnapped victims. That's one of the way they're funding their operations. You see, you need what I call arms to have a successful insurgency. You need arms, that's weapons, rifles, pistols, rocket-propelled grenades, surface-to-air missiles that you put on a shoulder. You need to be very mobile, but you need arms. Do they have arms? Yes, they have arms. They need people or recruits, A-R. R is recruit. Recruits are more or less flocking to them. They need money. They have a lot of money. Some don't want to dignify them by calling them Islamic State. Let me tell you, they're getting millions of dollars every day by selling oil, and their estimates, they already have between $1 and $2 billion of funds. So they have the money, and yes, and the S is strategy. They have a strategy, and their strategy is to use terror as a tactic, but to fight an insurgency war to overthrow the government of Iraq, as well as Kurdistan. And they are taking territory, and they're holding territory, both in Syria and Iraq. And they have experienced military personnel. Because many of the former Ba'athist generals and officers in Saddam's army are part of this group. So they have leadership. And the problem is, the reason why Sunnis are flocking to them is this is a religious sectarian war between Sunnis and Shia. And they're sick and tired of being the Sunnis mistreated by the central government in Iraq that was dominated by the Shiites. There's no love lost between the Sunnis and the Shia in Iraq. They hate each other. And see, the mistake that was made by Bush going in, he didn't have an exit strategy because, frankly, I don't think they ever wanted to exit because it was all about oil. Because I always get back to this, why would the United States ever go into Iraq? There's only one very, very simple answer to that. It's oil. That's the only thing, frankly, that Iraq has that the Europeans as well as the United States would want. That's the one thing of value that they have is large, proven reserves of oil. It's always been about oil. And we wanted to have an impact and control a lot of that and make money at it. There's some large companies that make a lot of money at that if we can control it. So from day one, it was always about oil. And you need to keep that in mind. But the problem is we didn't have a strategy to win the peace. It's very easy to take down a regime, but then you're in charge. You have to put in your institutions in place to keep the peace. And we made some fundamental errors. One was disbanding the Iraqi army, and that was a big one. The second one was a very broad de-Ba'athization policy. And the problem there is most of the Sunnis that were Ba'athists were in all levels of the government. Yes, take out the heads. I have no argument with that. But the problem is the institutions that you need, for example, to supply electricity, to supply water, to supply police protection, courts, all that went away, and we had wholesale looting in Baghdad. In other words, we did not come prepared with a plan and the number of forces that we needed to win the peace. We lost. In a space of 6 months, we went from liberator to occupier, and occupiers are traditionally hated. It was only a matter of time that the local population started blowing us up, American soldiers up, when they went on patrol. Now, I don't have time to revisit that, but my point is this. Anytime you hear someone saying, well, we need to go back to Iraq, I always say, okay, get a declaration of war, step one, and two, lay out for Congress how you're going to win the peace, not how you're going to win the war. Winning the war is relatively easy compared to winning the peace, because if you don't have a strategy and a plan to win the peace and enough troops and other people on the ground to do it, you have no business going in there in the first place. And that is the problem that the Bush administration, with the heavy influence of the neocons, largely Republicans, did. They try to win it on the cheap with limited forces, and quickly in and out, and it backfired. And now we have the chaos in Iraq and Syria that supposedly we're going to prevent. And there's a clip on the next show I hope to have time. It's a clip of George W. Bush in front of Congress in a State of the Union message, in essence predicting exactly what we have today. You see, the problem is this. The surge worked. Bush finally woke up and replaced the general, replaced the Secretary of Defense, changed his strategy, and militarily it worked, but politically it was a failure. It was a failure. It was thrown away because of the government of Iraq dominated by the Shia. And it's leading to exactly where we are today. And then the error was compounded when Obama pulled out all our forces in Iraq in December of 2011. So we're reaping what we sowed. And that is chaos, violence, genocide in Iraq. See, it's very tempting, and I've been guilty of this too. Bomb them. Destroy them. Why can't we do it? Well, I'll tell you why. When you're fighting an insurgency, and they know how to fight an insurgency, you blend in with the population. You can't tell who the good and bad guys are. That, in essence, is the problem. And a counterinsurgency strategy works, but here's the catch. It takes decades, a minimum of 10 years or more, for a successful counterinsurgency strategy to work. And the American people simply will not put up with having tens of thousands of U.S. soldiers being based in Iraq and being killed daily. They're sick of it. And Obama knows that. So it's very easy to criticize the president. But at least he's... So a lot of people, mainly Republicans, mainly the neoconservative groups... You see, I've been a conservative since Goldwater. These are not Goldwater Republicans. These are former Democrats, former progressives, former liberals that got sick of what was happening in the Democratic Party. They drifted over to the Republican Party. I know the names. I'm not going to embarrass them, but look them up. You can find out who they are. And they were the ones that wanted George Bush to do exactly what he did, and it failed. It failed miserably. And our generals didn't cover themselves with glory. Oh, they got medals. They got promotions. But it was our troops that paid the price, and their families that paid the price, because we didn't have leadership. And there's a phrase that one general that I've always, I don't have any heroes. But if I were to have a hero, there's a general that I admire. He's not perfect. And that was General George Marshall. And he has a very deserved reputation, and I'll use the phrase, telling truth to power. And that's very unusual in any military service. I can attest to that. Because unfortunately, you have a lot of conformist in our military. If you want to get promoted, you toe the line, even when what your boss is doing or their bosses are doing is nonsense, is wrong. It's not going to work. And Marshall could stand up to presidents and tell them, you're wrong. And here's why. We have very few generals today, general officers, that really can do that. Because I'll tell you, if you do it with this president, you very likely will be retired that day. And see, that's the problem. And it doesn't matter when it's a Democrat or a Republican president or Secretary of Defense. And that is a big problem. I'm hearing a lot of talk show hosts that say they're libertarian. This is what always strikes me as funny. They'll say, I'm for limited government. I don't want government intervention into the U.S. economy. Well, great. That's terrific. And I'm thinking of several talk show hosts. Not that there are that many libertarian, true libertarian. But when it comes to this issue, they're the biggest government interventionists around. They want to go over there and kick butt, drop bombs, fire missiles. And very few of them have served in the military. I have, but not in combat. And that sort of rubs me the wrong way. So you have a lot of people that are what I call not Monday morning quarterbacks, though some of them are jocks, that are, I call them armchair generals. This is what we should do in Iraq today. Oh, what do you know about Iraq? What do you know about the tribes? What do you know about the religious differences? And for most of them, the answer is little or nothing. And I don't pretend to be an expert. I'm doing a lot of reading on it, but I'm not an expert. And there's a long history here of animosity both between families, tribes, religious sects, and the overall clash between the Sunnis and the Shiites in Iraq. And you also have the division between those who want a secular government and those who want a religious or theocracy or caliphate. So it's a complex problem, and there are no easy answers. And what's frustrating is the Islamic State, believe it or not, wants the United States to intervene. They want the United States military to bring the troops back. Bring the troops back. That's what they truly want. And if we don't watch out, you'll get public opinion, and the media is banging the drums as well. You see, we're repeating the same mistakes that happened under George Bush. We're exaggerating the threat, and that's what we're doing right now. The Islamic State is a 10-foot-tall giant. They went from a JV putting on a professional jersey, to paraphrase President Obama, to now they're 10 feet tall. They have great military capability. Well, excuse me, and I've seen a number of estimates, but the hardcore Islamic State, in other words, their leadership, the true believers, maybe 3 to 5,000. Maybe 3 to 5,000. I know they might have 30 to 50,000 recruits, but that's the core. Several brigades could take this outfit on and destroy them. But then what are you going to do? The Bush strategy again, quickly pull them out. In other words, repeat the same mistakes that we made in the Iraq War. Because what they're going to quickly do is switch from a terrorist conventional type war to an insurgency. And the U.S. military does not want to fight a insurgency. They're very good at conventional war. They're very good at nuclear. And on small special operations, they're very, very good. But in a widespread insurgency that would tie down military assets for decades, they don't want any part of that. And I understand why they don't want any part of it. Because invariably, the American people say, enough is enough, bring the troops home. You see, if the American people are not willing to have at least 50 to 100,000 combat troops in Iraq for 10 to 20, maybe 30 years. And the answer to that is no, absolutely not. We don't need their oil. We have plenty of oil in the United States. And if they want to kill each other, we're staying out. That is the political consensus today. And some of your smart neoconservatives are into that. They describe it as the American people are war weary. I have a better way to describe it. They have learned their lessons. You know, the Army, I think it's the Army, has a lessons learned center. And they better go back and review those lessons learned in Iraq. because we, the Army and the Marines, made major mistakes in planning. And part of the problem was the civilian leadership, starting with the president, but the Secretary of State, the Vice President, and the Secretary of State's civilian staff. Very smart people. But intelligence is not wisdom. Let me say that again. Intelligence is not wisdom. You can be very smart, but very inexperienced. And unfortunately, that is a recipe for being very dangerous and getting a lot of people killed. And I don't care what you believe, I'm results-oriented. And if you didn't do your homework on planning how to set up a civilian government, in other words, how to win the peace, I'm using that as a shorthand, then you have no business sending the American people's sons and daughters and spending billions, trillions of dollars in this adventure that is turned into a disaster. Learn from your mistakes. Apparently, the neocons are simply incapable of learning from their mistakes. They won't admit they made them, and they certainly haven't learned from them. You would think they want us to invade today. Now, some are being very careful, and this is something else that drives me nuts. And part of the problem is Obama saying this. We don't have a strategy yet. When a president commander-in-chief says that, are you crazy? First of all, you don't say that. And second, what do you say? We're planning it. We have a strategy, but we're not going to announce it. We're not going to tell you what our strategy is. Because I'll tell you, if you tell anyone in Washington what your strategy is, the next day you'll read it in the paper. A good strategy has to take the initiative, and it has to be a surprise to your enemies. You don't announce it on major television networks what your strategy is. That's what I call being stupid, more than stupid, idiotic. Well, where's the strategy? I don't know if he has one, and it's not going to be unless he's willing to go in to Iraq, and he isn't, for 10, 20, 30 years with a force of at least 50 to 100,000 and have them stay. Yes, over time, if the institutions are built up, you can phase them down. But why repeat again? This is what, Iraq War II? Well, we failed once. We're going to try to get it right a second time. Or a third time if you count the surge. The American people have no tolerance for this. And if you're advocating that, and I know there are people calling in, well, we should bomb them to the Stone Age. Excuse me, you want to kill innocent men, women, children? Because that's what you're advocating, doing exactly what they're doing. And it's cold-blooded killing, genocide of people that don't share their religious faith. So you would have, let's take the extreme example. You would use a nuclear bomb to take out a city or a town? Is that what you're advocating? Oh, no. I'm not advocating nuclear weapons. But we can bomb them. Excuse me, bombs miss, and they hit innocent people. And the first thing the Islamic State will do is they'll switch their strategy from more or less conventional right now right back to an insurgency. And that's what happened in Iraq, in the Iraq War. You need to learn from your mistakes. You need to know the history. Don't repeat them. Don't be a fool. Because most of the people that are calling, as well as most of the people that are neoconservatives, they're not going to pay any price other than taxes. One of them said, well, we should put a declaration of war on President Obama's desk and see what he does with it. Now, for once, I partially agree. Because I'm a constitutionalist, and if we seriously believe that we have a most important national interest in Iraq, then declare war. But I want to pose a question to you. When are we going to stop having our armed forces, our Army, Navy, Marines, CIA, be the security forces for our large oil companies? Because, ladies and gentlemen, that is the only national interest in Iraq. The only national interest. It's the oil. And if you put it in those terms, I'll tell you, the vast majority of the American people will say, we don't want a war. Stay out. They've been killing each other for hundreds of years. Stay out. We don't need their oil. Leave. We've been there. We've done that. It didn't turn out well. It's been a disaster. It's getting worse. Stay out. Now, what is the Islamic State doing? They don't want us to stay out. They want us to get involved again. They don't like the airstrikes. That's why they're going to be heading a lot of Europeans and a lot of Americans. We've just seen the first two. They're going to do this and do this and do this to provoke us, provoke the United States as well as other European powers to get engaged, to intervene, to put combat troops back in Iraq and Syria. That's exactly what our enemy's strategy is. And we will lose the lives of our sons and daughters. We'll be spending more and more money in an endless war, and we'll have a repeat of what we had from March of 2003 to the end of 2011. Those who don't study history will repeat history. You need to learn the lessons of the past. Arrogance and confidence that you're right doesn't cut it. You got to be wise. You don't play the enemy's game. It's a loser's game. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to provoke us to get involved or intervene once again in Iraq. And that would be a strategic, political, and economic mistake of the first order. Of the first order. And the same crowd in the Republican Party, the neoconservatives, are cheerleading and banging on those drums. And ladies and gentlemen, I am no fan of Barack Obama. If you listen to this show, he's the opposite of literally on almost anything policy issue, especially in the economic area, but also in the foreign policy. I don't agree with him on anything, but I'm not going to be critical at this point. He has inherited a rather difficult foreign policy challenge, if you will. With that, I'm going to wrap up the show. I went a little longer than I had planned, and I really have to get out of here. Tomorrow, I hope to have a long show. It might be at 3 o'clock. We're still working out the schedule. So with that, I want to play my closing music, America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own unless otherwise stated and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone at KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. Have a good day and go to your classes and do your homework. Good afternoon. Mm-hmm.